Well, it's a chance for me to say a thank you to so many people who have been involved this evening, both in preparations but also taking part. And so to your young ones and to some of us older ones, thank you. And in a sense, we're all in this together. Thank you to each and every person. But I do just want to mention a few people. Always dangerous to mention names, but Pauline and Tom Fitzgibbon have done so much over past weeks in getting ready, both for Christmas Open Church and also in terms of work done ready for tonight's carols by candlelight. To Christine Wheatley and her team for the tree and other decorations, and Mark Mully and his team for administration and getting things ready for the service. So many people involved, musicians and the like. So I think it would be good just to stop and say a big thank you to each and every one of them. A round of applause as well. The purpose of a talk in a carol service is not just because it's tradition, but because it really is an important time, just for a few minutes to stop and to really dig and understand a little bit more, God willing, of what this is all about. Because by definition, in our humanity and in our traditions, we are so used to this cycle that seems to be getting quicker and quicker every 12 months. But how we need the meaning of Christmas to come afresh. Each and every one of us needs it like that. And we've just heard read to us from that last reading that David brought in Matthew's Gospel chapter 2. Very much a sense of Jesus being portrayed to the world as the King. We've had a great year, 2012, in many, many ways. We'll look fondly back of those years, of those months of rain, but also rain celebrating the processions in terms of the Jubilee, the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. So many good celebrations. We'll think of the flotilla on the Thames on that wet Sunday afternoon at the beginning of June, the concert the next day, the Queen's procession, the service at St Paul's Cathedral. Just wonderful occasions as a nation where we've come together to thank God, and even if we weren't thanking God, to thank and appreciate Her Majesty the Queen. 60 years, by anybody's book, is an amazing period of time in which she has served us. But as I was thinking about the word Jubilee, and it's been very much the theme and the focus for Christmas at Cambrai 2012, the word Jubilee actually has a Bible root, and not everybody is aware of that. If you read some of the Old Testament laws that God gave to his people for ordering society and community life really well, in Leviticus chapter 25, we understand that part of God's design was that every 49th year, when that was complete, the 50th year should be a year of Jubilee. We understand that to be by the word jubilation and celebration, but it was far more. And when I tell you that for those people who were poor and had debts, in the 50th year, the year of Jubilee, those debts would be cancelled. For those people who owed land or had land that had been confiscated, that land would be returned to the rightful owners. In the 50th year, agriculturally, land was to be left alone so that it could be restored and renewed, ready to go again. Some of God's design prints on a good order for society and community life. And we understand something of what that must have been for people who had debts, for people who didn't have land and property and had to wait for the 50th year for those debts to be cancelled and to enjoy a year of peace and prosperity and rest. A year when justice could be done and actioned before starting again. So it is that while we think on that theme of Jubilee, when Jesus himself came to this earth, after his birth and growing up, aged around about 30, when he started to go public to talk to the people, to show them what he could do as God's son here on this planet, Jesus did something really, really interesting and significant. On a Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue and the scroll was taken from, he turned to the scroll of Isaiah, which is part of the Old Testament, written some 700 years before Jesus Christ was born. And Jesus read these words written by the prophet Isaiah, B.C. 700. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, release for them, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. And when Jesus had read those words, he sat down, and then he said this, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." Now why do I start with that before we look at Matthew for a few minutes? Well, it's this, that here was Jesus, the Son of God, walking on this earth. And he had drawn on Isaiah chapter 61. And he had read it again, saying how the year of Jubilee had arrived in him. He had come to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. The year in which people could be set free. A year in which captives and blind people could be made to see. A special year which was not once every 50 years, but was now freely available day in, day out. No wonder people wanted Jesus, the King. And for these few minutes, I want to just quickly say two things and then add a third point for us here this evening. The first of all is to see the Magi. We've heard them sung about, we've sung about them ourselves just now. Traditionally the wise men, as we refer to them, from the East. These were individuals, we don't know specifically how many there were, but typically we think of them as three, because of three gifts given to King Jesus. And I know that Christmas cards sanitise these wise magi. In our school plays we have the crowns put on the heads, the curtains wrapped around, and we've all done it, we all love it. But let's just dig a little bit about who these people were. We understand that in all probability they were from the East, so that would mean Persia, perhaps even China. And they had seen a star appear in the sky. And on seeing that star and on reading their stuff, their academic scrolls and all that they had to go on, they decided to set out and to go and find a king. We understand from the account in the Gospels that these would have been wealthy, scholarly types. So different from those rustic shepherds who were eyewitnesses of Jesus as well. But these magi, they had seen no miracle to convince them. They had heard no teaching that persuaded them. They had seen no greatness to overawe them, but they had seen a star in the sky, and off they go. They wanted to know what this was about. They are portrayed as people with inquisitive minds, and that's a good thing. They were prepared to travel, to make an effort. These magi portray the Gentiles, those who were not Jews, those who were far away, who wanted to see King Jesus. What a wonderful reminder that these characters were examples of the very people that Jesus came into this world for. Yes, he came for his own people, the Jew, but he also came for the Gentile. He came for people like me, people like you. God so loved the world, we started our service with this evening, that he gave his one and only Son. And in their own words in Matthew 2, these magi came to worship Jesus. And Jesus is also wanted by somebody else. Secondly, that was the first one, Magi from the East. Secondly, he's wanted by King Herod, and we know that, but let's remind ourselves. You see, if this was a pantomime, it was at this point in the Christmas story that the boos would start, because Herod is the baddie. But friends, this is not a pantomime. This is the really dark side of this world. The dark and evil side there in the first century, round about the year zero, as we would have it in our calendar. But tragically and horrifically, the dark side that continues century after century, even to today. And what we understand is that King Herod is thrown into a fury. He's hopping mad. He is angry because he has been told of this king. And he will have no rivals. So he wants to find this King Jesus. He wants to know more. He wants to assert his own authority, to put down any potential rivals. You don't often hear this bit read at a carol service because it's not pleasant, but further on in Matthew chapter 2, we hear there again of the evil side of Herod with his instructions to kill all the boys under 2 years of age living in Bethlehem and the vicinity. Have you got the contrast this evening? Very simply, the Magi who go and take an effort to go and find Jesus because they want to worship him. And this evil King Herod, the despot, who wants to kill Jesus. Herod is exposed here. His worship is evidently phony. He says to the Magi when they pitch up, "Oh, tell me where you find him and then I too can go and worship him." My friends, it's just talk. And we understand that. He calls around him the priests and the religious leaders, the teachers of the day, the ones who know the Old Testament scriptures inside out. They know their stuff. They've got their GCSE, A-level and university degree in theology. It's oozing out of them. And they're able to point to the verse in the Old Testament that says, one day God will send his son the king, born in Bethlehem. And that's where they focus their attention. But isn't it fascinating? Even though they are so close, probably only 5 miles away from where Bethlehem is, Herod and those that he has gathered around him don't bother to go and find Jesus themselves. The Magi, who have travelled hundreds if not thousands of miles, go on to find Jesus and to worship him. Herod, bent on evil destruction, will do anything to have Jesus killed. The Magi come and find the house where Jesus is, and they go in and they bow down and they worship and adore Jesus. You know, there's something deeply authentic that I see in the worship of these wise men, these Magi from the East. And it just presses a question for me, and I throw it to you as well. In terms of the worship of our lives, who and what do we spend our time focusing on, worshipping, giving our full attention to, our heart to? It's very easy, very natural that we can put things and people first place in our lives. But what the Christmas story does is it confronts us head on to say, are we going to be like Herod, who in a sense doesn't want to have any rivals? He wants to be the king and top dog. Or are we going to come like those who had all the wealth and all the intellect and all the gifts and come and find Jesus and bow down and worship? You know, their gifts that they give to Jesus, even though he is young, are gifts fit for the king. Gold, incense, myrrh, each with intrinsic value economically, but also symbolic of all that these wise people are. They're incense was potentially part of their mystical, superstitious practices from the East. We know that myrrh was the spice that was used for embalming the dead. And here they are offering them to a child that they recognize to be a king. And they worship. Where they worship is not the issue, it's who they worship. And without any facts to go on, we know about the life of Jesus. They didn't know that storyline. We know Jesus had come to this world specifically to die, and as the motif on the screen shows you, in a sense, yes, it was for a manger and for a birth in the poorest of circumstances. But Jesus came to die. He was always going to head towards a cross, because in giving up his life in death, he would give life to people who came to him and believed on his name. Here were the Magi, the examples of those who came from other parts of the world to worship King Jesus. Friends, this Christmas time, I just wonder who we're worshipping. And does Jesus feature in our lives? Because, you know, he'd love to. That's why he came, to seek and to save lost people, people whose lives. And this brings me full circle back to the theme of Jubilee. I end with one of my favourite Christmas stories. It's nothing to do with Christmas in a sense, but it's so powerful to me at least, and I share it with you this evening. So he's told of a church service. And a well-dressed man, rather respectable man, went into the church and he took a seat somewhere near the front. A few minutes later, a lady arrived and she stared at the man who, how dare he, was sitting in her seat. And she let him know that. And so he politely and graciously apologised and moved to the seats at the back. This was in a different century, thank the Lord, where they had poor seats for the poor and you paid for your best seats at the front. Doesn't work like that these days, I assure you. He continued to worship from where he was sitting. She worshipped from where she was sitting. And on the way out, he quickly slipped away. And a friend said to the woman, "Do you know who that man was?" She didn't have a clue, but he was sitting in my seat, she said. "Oh," said the friend, "that man was Prince Oscar of Sweden, and he's in our country on a state visit." And I can't verify the story, but I like the point it makes. That he was a woman so close to royalty and yet did not recognise him and rejected him. And I wonder if this Christmas time we're so close to the royalty of King Jesus. A king who came to be close to us. Let's not reject him, but let's accept him and worship him. And my final point is a question, what about you? What about me in this Christmas time? In the classic words of the Spice Girls, "Tell me what you want, what you really, really want." It's good to get a bit of classic, sophisticated culture into a service. But you know, it's an important question. Tell me what you really, really want. Because back to that Jubilee theme, is it simply about being business as usual through the cycle of life, year after year after year? Or as we come close to the King, King Jesus, this Christmas time, have you ever realised his ability, his power to revolutionise your life? To satisfy like you like no one else can? To do what he was saying in that prophecy fulfilled of Isaiah 61, and there as we read it in Luke 4. To transform those who recognise their poverty. For those who have broken hearts and broken lives, to come and to heal and to be a friend, to be a saviour. To release people from prison, to release people who feel trapped by their circumstances. To set us free from the stuff of life which mucks us up. You get the point, Jesus came to open eyes, to open hearts, to meet us where we are. We don't need to put on the rich, sophisticated garb. We come as we are, and Jesus accepts us to speak liberty and freedom and deliverance and jubilee into our lives. He comes to be our King. Maybe just by hearing some of these things this evening, what you've heard already, you'd like to find out more about this Jesus. We would love to give you a booklet on the way out to tell you more. Maybe in the new year to arrange to have a coffee or to sign you up for one of our courses where we explain who Jesus is. My friends, this Christmas, will you recognise him as the wanted King to be King of your lives?